You are now listening to a new episode of Canadian Gardeners, hosted by Matt and Tiffany Whitney.
Hey, gardeners. Matt here.
Hi, Tiffany here.
We are at Vertical Roots Hydroponics, and we're going to be talking with Mike and Becky, the owners of said company. You guys, let's get into it, hey?
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for letting us come by and check out your facility. We just went on the 10 cent tour. It was pretty good. Penny tour, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, invoice is in the mail. Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. So yeah, we want to just dive into what you guys are about, how your business came to be. Can you give us
a little backstory
of who you guys are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm Mike, my wife Becky. We've been growing maybe, 3 years now?
Probably close to four years.
It actually started out with a mentor of mine. Let me back up. Years ago, 20 years ago, we went to the Philippines to visit, did some mission work, and met some kids over there. Long story short, they were all 18, and we thought, how great would it be to go back when our kids are all grown up and show them where we were? And of course, all those guys turned from 18 to 40, just like us. Amazing how the world doesn't stop. Yeah. And they're all farmers back in the day when we were there. And, just kind of fending for their lives every day. And when we were over there, I could see that they still weren't making a living and it was struggling. And we came home and my mentor said, hey, have you ever heard of aquaponics? And that's with fish instead of just adding straight nutrients. You have fish in the water. Talk a little bit about that later, maybe. And so we were actually in Manila, right? In Wendy's, Beck. And we're
having Frosties and fries.
Yeah. Chatting. And we started showing them videos of aquaponics. And I really didn't know much about it. I'd never planted a seed in my life. I'd never gardened in my life. I knew people that had.
Yeah.
I always was intrigued by it. And so we got on the airplane. We're pretty just like, we didn't think much of it. And next thing I know, they had converted an old chicken coop up in the mountains in Baguio, outside of Baguio City in the Philippines, and they started tearing it apart to build an aquaponics farm.
Oh, wow.
And so before I knew it, we were sending, 1,000 at a time and many times to set up this test farm. And just sourcing all the stuff we could, pumps and pipes and learning and
Ingenuity is incredible.
Yeah.
So you can't get everything in the Philippines. And so they're like using all these crazy things. And before we knew it, they had a aquaponics, three different types of growing mediums. And they were growing tomatoes and lettuce. Mm-hmm. And it was working.
Yeah. So one thing you can get over there is highly synthetic fertilizers, like it's everywhere.
Okay.
Most of it is built with urea, which is a compound that goes in the earth that will convert to nitrate slowly over time.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a lot of that, which we don't use in aquaponics or hydroponics because it's terrible for fish, but it's also terrible for the plant. So we started building this farm, and over Skype 6 months, they built this thing. And I said, if you guys get this working, I'll find the 50 grand to build a commercial greenhouse. Did I know it would be a lot more than 50 grand. And so we decided we were going to go stay there for 3 weeks with our kids, for 2 months and start working. I'm losing my timeline, but the idea was went back for 3 months, visited, worked on the farm, right?
Well, what happened is after we launched the farm, we moved our entire family. Kids went to online schooling.
Wow.
We moved there to build a farm. So they got land. They started building it without us. Mm-hmm. And we just kept sending money.
In the middle of rainy season, which is monsoon rain.
Yeah. And so then when we showed up, they had the basic wooden greenhouse built with some beds put together. And we were showing up to put together the aquaponics piece. And so
all the plumbing,
they've never done anything like this. They work day and night to grow a head of lettuce, and they get pennies for that.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a brand new concept to these Filipinos.
Yeah.
And it's less work with higher yield and way healthier. And nobody's heard of it. And so there we are.
Keep in mind, we had never grown anything.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like this was just YouTube central. Like I had every video on YouTube, if you showed me, I'd be like, yep, seen it. Yep, seen it. But it was always begging for more. Like you could never get all of the answers, right? Like it was always like, oh, but what? And mm-hmm. you could never get. So I met a guy named Joe, and he lives in Colorado. Now he's in Santa Fe, New Mexico, but he owns a company called Region Aquaculture. And he just became a friend and saw what we were doing and started pitching in. And he's built hundreds of farms and designed them. Just right. a great guy. Mm-hmm. Become best friends. Went and visited him in Denver a couple of years ago. We drove through. And so that kind of began the process. But then we realized, like I said to you earlier, like we realized we still have to add stuff to the water. Like fish don't poop out potassium and calcium. And the fish feed isn't the greatest most places. And if it is organic, it's, mm-hmm. it's very expensive.
So there's still inputs to be...
Still inputs have to go in the water. And so I got thinking like, man, I got to run oxygen all the time for these fish on high levels. I've got to maintain the water temperature and that change with seasons. And we came home. Our kids were old enough, came home. And they were still running the farm. A couple years went by. And it kind of went by the wayside. They got busy and it was hard.
Also COVID.
Hard to find a market to sell the product mm-hmm. in. And
they got shut down. Like they couldn't leave their houses. Yeah, then COVID came. They couldn't go to the farm. Like,
yeah, it got really difficult.
But we did manage to that farm could pump out 10,000 heads of lettuce.
Wow.
And, we grew a business called Highland Aquaponics and we started sourcing lettuce down to Manila and people started buying it and getting it delivered. And I think if COVID didn't show up, then there might have been something, mm-hmm. but it shut the entire country down. Like sourcing was impossible. Traveling was impossible.
Yeah, I was going to go back a few times and then it just kept getting more and more restricted. And then the people couldn't go to the farm. They weren't allowed into their homes. And so actually we met a girl at a university there and mm-hmm. she was in the agriculture program. She brought me in to teach on aquaponics after extensive amount of time me learning it, obviously. Here I am in the room with a bunch of professors, like dumb as a sack of nails, right? Like these guys have got years on me and they had never seen it, never heard of it. And they were so intrigued. So
you got the practical.
That's
Got the hands-on.
It's far from dumb, from a sack of nails, as you can see.
And there's hundreds of people coming through, maybe 100 or so a month coming in for tours, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the Philippines have never seen And so we were really the first commercial aquaponics farm in the Philippines. And if you go now, they're everywhere. And I just seen one the other day, a guy I knew, he built a massive one. So we were part of that. We really were. So there were no commercial farms until we had came in. And so being the first in that nation is that's a big nation, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I miss it a little bit, so we couldn't go back. The girl from the school, we just actually donated the greenhouse to her and her family.
Wow.
And
that's amazing.
They are splitting it up to aquaponics and growing some other things that are they can grow year round and make money throughout the rainy season, right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Because growing in rainy season there is very difficult for anybody,
right?
Because there's no sun.
Yeah,
and it can rain for 30 days and you don't see the sun. So up in the mountains, it's very, very difficult, right?
Gotcha.
Anyway, long way around. We came home, spent some time home.
The kids were getting older, they're 15, 16. At this point, we sensed they didn't really, they'd done three trips with us, full of energy and full of passion. On the fourth trip, we found that they were not that interested in going. And for us, family is a priority over anything.
They're living in a foreign country,
It's hard. It's hard to do that. So we decided that we were not going to return to the Philippines. It worked out because COVID did move in. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we were...
stayed in like a bad uncle.
Yeah.
Stayed over like a bad uncle.
And the life there is so much more simple. But so we came home, we went on a cruise for our anniversary, and that's when COVID hit. We got shut down in the middle of it all. Because not because of COVID, but because of another virus on our ship. But that's when that Japanese ship was shutting down because of Corona, and that's when it first took over. So I came home and I'm like, what am I going to do? Because I don't work in our other business at all anymore. I just do a little bit of IT, but I wouldn't say retired, but I stepped out of, I don't work every day. So now I'm like, what am I going to do? And so, I don't know, we started out by getting some fish and getting a Rubbermaid and thought I would try and just gross and just have something to do. And that evolved into creating a hydroponics farm in the back with an NFT system, which is just like pipes with holes and the water flows through. And
and testing all sorts of medias and seeds. And
but I wanted to go organic. So I was like, I'm going organic. And yeah. I won't say the name of the company, but there was a company at the time that I could get all this product from, and I could mix everything and I could make my own organics. And I started making teas, and I failed miserably and used worm castings. And of course, you can't Google this because it's not on the internet, right?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm.
Very few people are doing organic teas. And so I was successful to some point. I grew some nice lettuce. We grew some
incredible lettuce with this organic tea.
Yeah.
It, on a mass scale,
yeah.
It's a different
but then,
conversation because it was a small bucket.
and replicating it
yeah.
was like, now what? Like,
yeah.
I'm not really good at keeping notes. So I was like, how am I going to replicate this over and over and over? And I started researching large production, and it was just not done yet, right? Yeah. So I switched to hydroponics, and I tried, I don't know, hundreds of dollars, literally hundreds, in different products. There's some organic. They claim to be organic. Then mm-hmm. I dive into it. They're not organic.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up growing, and then people would taste it. And then they're like, when can we buy it? When are you going to build your farm? When are you, you know?
We started like an Instagram page. We bought the domain verticalroots and .ca. And so we started like going towards maybe this is something here. We've mm-hmm. done it in the Philippines. Maybe mm-hmm. we could do it here. And the responses that we got from some of the testings and reaching it out was quite good. And so we thought, well, maybe we have something here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a family member stepped up and gave us a bridge loan with a location that we could do a prototype. And so, yeah, so we got the loan from them, and they gave us this space, and we rented it from them, and we launched our prototype.
Yeah. Wow. Keep in mind, I'd still never planted a seed. The team did it in the Philippines. Yeah. I'd never planted a seed, gave it light, watered it, and figured out what's the best germination practice.
So were you on that note, were you the one that was building the water lines and all that stuff? Like you were more of
the systems
manager, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I was working with Joke considerably because flow rates, pH, like I didn't even know what half of this stuff was until I started learning. But yeah, I was working on the actual design of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we gave people jobs over there. They seeded, they did all those things. And so when I came home, I had to learn how to do all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
So,
and you have to source what you need. Like here, it's way easier to source things, which was amazing.
It is to an extent. It's geared heavily to the cannabis industry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all of my research always ended up in cannabis research because, you know, but I'm starting to learn a lot about cannabis as they have their vegetative stage, right? So I'm just in constant vegetative stage. So they do treat nutrients differently, but just understanding the lights and things like that. And so we started the prototype room and we did that for about a year, maybe not just shy of a year, just over a year.
Yeah, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. Once we got the product out there, and we own a marketing agency as well. So we could really push the company and push the marketing because we know how to do that. But in 1 year, we got like 300 clients. And we got people signing up for subscriptions. It's a subscription-based model as well. And we did some markets and we got some restaurants. And we thought, wow, like we can only grow about like less than 400 heads in this prototype a week.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like, no, this is definitely something.
Yeah, it was always to prove the market.
It was always a prototype.
Is there a market?
Yeah.
You know, we see all these massive farms being built, but is there a market? Like, does it exist in Edmonton?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, so we thought, well,
yeah, it does. You know,
it does.
Yeah.
So we
found that it does, and people are really looking for a healthier, you know, option. So that's kind of how it all started, and then
So now we're here.
In December,
with an expansion to
dove in
prep
pretty heavily here. Yeah,
this is a big one.
We doubled our investment and went for it. So.
And it's paying off. We've had a lot of there's a lot of people that are really looking for local food, mm-hmm. but not only local food, healthy food for your family.
Nutrient dense.
This is like when it comes to your door within hours of being harvested.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it is just full of nutrients.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to find anything like it anywhere near here.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think when you taste it, you guys tasted it, there's a difference in the freshness and the quality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that in, kids eat this out of the bag. Kids are eating lettuce as a snack. And that says something for us because we can get good, healthy food into kids and into families.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. That's exciting to be able to produce food like that and get it in their homes.
Yes.
And of course, we're not traveling thousands of miles.
Yeah.
It's just all happening so fast.
Mm-hmm. So I have a bit of a story to tell. So I found you guys on Instagram, and what admired me about your business model, you've already kind of brought it up, is that it isn't traveling hundreds of miles. It's close. You're also, because it is an Edmonton company, you're also funneling money back into the economy, right? Being, you know, in here, not California, and et cetera. So the business model makes a lot of sense. And with, like, you know, gas going where it's going now, we might see, what, $2 a barrel? Like, you don't, or yeah, sorry, $2 a,
yeah. I said that wrong. A liter.
A liter. I was going to say $2 a liter, maybe even next year. Like, analysts were saying that we might see $200 a barrel on the on the crude side. So those things are all factors in the inflation of your product, right? Yeah. So that's something also to consider as well.
They are. And I'll just say, I know you want to move on to the next thing, but I want to say, like, the grocery store, you might only see a 30 cents increase in your head of lettuce, right? Because they're selling to millions of people. But to the local restaurant, really, like, the one of the community driving things in our communities is restaurants. You go there to have a beer with a buddy. You go there for celebrations with your family. We found a new date spot. It's the the Captain's Boil. And it's like, we all have those places we like to go to, but if those restaurants see a huge increase in their costs, we feel it way more at the restaurant, but so does the owner. And so,
Because those local restaurants, like, these are, you know, like Three Vikings and Chartier and Nani's and High Level Diner and Dutch Delicious and Glow Juicery.
Definitely have to put them in the
list, because these guys are all locally owned and operated.
Okay.
And so when you go to one of these places, you're supporting local residents and they're feeding their family.
People and have spent $1 million to build a restaurant and are local, and you know, they're looking to not have to pay double, triple just based on what the gas prices are.
Yeah, and that's what happens. Border,
what's happening in the foreign, you know, another country. And so, that's one of our driving, that's one of our, you know, someone said to me the other day, like, how did you become a green thumb? Like, I'm like, I'm not really a green thumb. I like to solve problems. So the problem solved for me is like,
that's true.
That's more
We can fix this problem, right?
You
know, I won't go into the politics of oil and stuff, but it's like, we can fix Canada's problems with supporting local, each province, right? I think local farms, and I'm not concerned if other farms pop up like this, because then there's a million and what, million two, million three.
And there's lots of market share to go around.
To feed all of Edmonton, right?
We're
okay with little
companies. And I like the idea of, if there is more competition of those, you know, smaller companies that do pop up, that disruption in those big agricultural communities, like that feed, you know, the grocery stores, I'm not going to list them off, but that competition, that is important. That's what, you know, drives a good free market.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And there are some companies that are starting to do that on major scales here. Swiss Leaf is one of them. They're huge.
They're doing a great job.
You know, but your investment in those farms is in the millions to start, right? And so it isn't for everybody.
We're definitely not at a
million yet, but we can feed, you know, quite a few people with our, just our little operation. You know? And so,
How big is the footprint that you work in? What's the, can you give us some numbers on how many heads you have?
If
you
currently our room is about 1600 square feet of space.
Okay.
And we're growing right now. We'll be probably by the middle of next week, we'll be growing in 4 by 32 So we'll be pushing around, well, we can get to about 700 heads a week. Now our price point is a little higher than the average, and it's higher than the store, and our model is, you know, higher, better product,
last longer,
like, its shelf better life quality. Is a lot better quality. And we can fetch a higher price, which means we don't have to provide as much. And I think that's the model, personally. I don't think mass production at a discounted rate
Yeah.
Always means that people cut corners, and when you cut corners, then, you know, it ends up being a lesser quality product. And so we've just decided we know we're that higher, but we're going to get to 700. This room can do somewhere in 15 to 2000 heads a week, which is, you know, pretty large.
That's a lot.
So what day is that? What day is that? What's that turnout? What's that?
So we cycle right now about from seed to harvest about 33 to 34 days.
Okay.
That's pretty good.
We're trying to get it down to 32.
We're sitting about 36 right now.
36, we've shrunk our seedlings down again. But I mean, if you think of a normal head of lettuce in a garden, I think it's what, 63, 65 days for a average head of lettuce?
It depends on the type.
Yeah, it depends on the type.
Yeah.
For sure. So maybe 40 to 60. Yeah.
So we would say we're 40% quicker in growing, right?
Yeah.
Which in production is amazing. I mean, you can build something 40% faster. We ventured into three different types of lettuce, a couple leafy greens and a romaine. We've ventured into kale and arugula, which seems to be really popular.
Yes.
In the Philippines, I did grow, we had 1,000 tomato plants and 1,000 cucumber plants growing, which was an extreme amount of work to just always be tying up, because they would grow 15 to 18 feet long.
And you're always having to clean them up and train them. There's work in that.
There's a huge amount of work, right? Yeah. And so everyone thinks electricity is our biggest expense, but it's actually labor. Currently, it's me and my wife, my son, and a couple others that help us. So our labor costs are a little lower.
So
that's where we're at. Our model has always been from the beginning, multiple small farms across Canada. That's our thing. We have actually sat with big investors and talked about, you know, building thousands and thousands of square feet and automation and buying buildings and land. And it's just not our thing. Like, we just, I don't know what it is inside of me. It's, I feel like you lose that personal touch when it starts getting automated, and there's space for it because we can't feed the city. But for us, I think we're going to stay small, medium farms, mom and pop, kind of 3-4 staff, local places, local. You know, Grand Prairie, these places that are, you know, good sized population, and they want to feed their local market.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to segue into another topic. We had talked about this earlier when we were inside your farm is, I had talked to this in other podcasts, but I want to get your point of view is, synthetic to organic. Like, my wife and I, we deal more in the living soils, outdoor gardening. So this world that we're stepped in, or your world that we've stepped into, is unfamiliar to us, but you do use some organics, fertilizers. And I want you to, if you can, in your own words, tell us, because you use a higher quality nutrients, just tell us in your own words what your perspective is and your point of view.
Yeah, I mean, like I said from the beginning, I've always wanted to be that first commercial organic farm. That's, and I'm not a hug a bear, save a tree kind of guy, you know. I'm not a hippie. I'm not, like, no offense to all those organic guys, because I think it's great. I think it's healthier. I really do.
Yeah.
But from a practical business standpoint, it's very difficult to do. Like I said, I was working with a company. I had my hands on, I have to think back now, it was a phosphorus rock. I forget what it was called, rock phosphate. I had bat guano, which was from a hydroponics store. I had worm castings. It's been a while. It's been a long time. I've done a lot in between. But I used a lot of things that I had to extract in my own tea. And in the process of doing that, I really found it difficult to get a measurement. Like, okay, I want more phosphorus. I want less phosphorus. I want more potassium. I want less, right? And I found it very difficult. And so my first thing I concluded was, this isn't ready for a commercial yet, because it's almost going to have to be done somewhere where they have testing equipment and so on, right?
Yeah.
So I kiboshed that. My next goal was, okay, I need to find the most clean nutrients I can find. And I found a ton of things on the market that said organic, and they weren't organic. I won't name them because I don't want to be sued, but There's a lot. There's a lot. Or they'll use the word organic, excuse me, in their name, but they're not organic.
They're not
from the pure sense. When I say organic, I mean derived from a plant or an animal or directly from the earth without any like manufacturing, right?
We talked about seaweed a moment ago
So I started using liquid seaweed. I'm giving away some of my secrets now, but I use liquid seaweed to feed my seedlings. And I use something that everyone actually should use in their garden, which is lab, which we talked about, mm-hmm. which is made from rice water and molasses and milk. So you can just Google lab, how to make lab. It's really easy. You just strain out rice. You get the rice water. You ferment it. You add milk. It makes cheese on top. You pour off the cheese. You take the middle part. And it's full of millions and millions of counts of bacteria, good bacteria,
mm-hmm.
that allow the plant to take up the nutrients. And so,
is there a bubbler? Does it make that anaerobic or aerobic?
Just happens.
It just happens.
Fermentation.
Oh, okay.
And it's probably, if you want to say organic, that would be as organic as humanly possible. Now, if you go back about 2 weeks ago and you look at our farm, the plants are like 2.5 feet tall. They're crazy, right? There's a mixture of that. We also use some natural enzymes. This stuff takes a lot of practice, and we've failed and we've made it. And we, like I said, consistency is the hardest.
Tweak the recipe, sounds like.
So I found a lot of stuff that was organic, quote unquote organic, which wasn't organic. So what I started doing is I started using the highest quality micronutrients I could find, which was they all made with chelating agents. So a chelating agent can take an ion or a nutrient, and it can make it more bio-ready for the plant. Like, that's as scientific as I can make it, but it makes it more bioavailable for the plant.
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is there's less junk in it so that it doesn't force the plant to uptake the nutrients. So, like, for example, iron is very difficult for plants to take up. Yeah. But when it comes in a chelated version, it's taken up better by the plant. And the stuff that chelates it isn't. It's an inorganic object and falls off and it doesn't affect the plant. So some people say, how does your plant so green? And that's because we feed it the right amount of iron, mm-hmm. not nitrogen. Everyone thinks you got to feed more nitrogen to get green plants. It's not. It's iron. And so we feed a really good, healthy, chelated iron. That it's very expensive product. So we don't cheap out on our nutrients, right? And
it comes
in the taste. Yeah. We don't ever have bitter lettuce.
Yeah.
And we don't, as you saw, we don't have tip burning. We don't have like
bug problems, any of that, because it's all
farm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've always strived to be as natural as we can without, you know, calling ourselves organic, because organic really means rejuvenating the soil, right? Yeah. So when these guys say they're organic hydroponic farmers, I always chime in and be like, what do you mean?
Because
organic
is
actually the regeneration of soil.
Yeah.
And that means every so many years you have to stop using the soil so it can regenerate.
Yeah.
So I think what I think is coming though in the few years, in even 5 years, is this whole, or there'll be a whole world created around hydroponics that will be called something hydro organic, or something that will separate us from
a subculture, is what you're saying.
Is that and almost like a certification that will come.
Yeah,
like, because there's ORM.
Guys like us that care about what we use.
Yeah.
It's not just about creating the fastest growing product.
Mm-hmm.
We actually care about what we feed people,
right?
Because we want to sleep at night. And then there's the guy who's, you know, the capitalist who's chasing the fast production, and just dumping whatever in because it makes it grow better.
Yeah, but that's a buyer beware type situation. And like,
it is, yeah.
Yeah, and what are you really consuming at that point? That's the other thing that you have to.
And there's an awareness now, like maybe in the world you guys operate in, it's been very evident for you what you eat and you research.
Yeah.
And there's a whole world, a small population of the world that really cares about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say in the last 2 years, 3 years in the pandemic, for some odd reason, people just started caring more about where their food comes from, how long it sat on a truck, and what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And like as a kid, I never paid attention to that.
Gotcha.
Did you? Like, I never.
No, not really.
Like, Mom, where did our lettuce come from?
Never.
Where did our cucumbers, you know? So
I do now.
Yeah.
Wow. Flying. We got to wrap it up. But it was.
I hope I answered some of your
questions. No, you did. It was really at the realm where I wanted to be. So this is
We'll have to do another part one of many.
There's going to be pictures in the captions. Some of the names of companies that they supply or restaurants that they supply will also have websites. Yeah. We'll have that in the captions as well. So you'll get to get a better idea of who is Vertical Roots and all that fun stuff.
And how you can find them. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah.
Sweet.
We'll just
all right.
We'll
say thanks
bye
for joining us.
Yeah.
Until next time.
Thanks, guys.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to another episode of Canadian Gardeners. Tune in next week.